coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Tuesday, August 16th, 2022. I want to thank you for tuning in. Thanks for your belief and trust in me and in this platform, Eric the Tech, myself, and, well, just us. Just us. No justice, but just us. All right, couple of things to get into. But before I get into everything, before I get into anything, okay, I want to show you something. By the way, if you hear all kinds of construction noises, it's in the part next to us, and I apologize. Nothing I can do. What do you want me to do? Go over there and tell a bunch of construction workers to be quiet? No, not me. Not going to happen. But before I get into the stuff that I need to get into, because a lot of heavy-duty stuff, including, whoops. Yeah, I guess we did take President Trump's passports. Whoops. And a bunch of these numbnuts out there in the mainstream media, which a lot of people still believe, saying, nah, they didn't do that. It's a lie. And then DOJ comes and says, well, yeah, I guess we did. We'll give them back. And some other things. But there's bigger problems to tackle right now. But I want to open with this, because this has been on my mind. I was going to save it for Thursday with Steve Quayle. But as far as I know, it's just going to be Steve and I on Thursday. I was going to save it for Steve. But you know what? This has been on my mind so much. And right now, I can't even hear myself think over the noise. So what I'll do is let's play this clip. This from, I think, 1959 or 1960. I'm not sure which. But you remember The Twilight Zone. Ran for 5 successful seasons. Unbelievable predictive programming stuff. Absolutely incredible stuff. Here is a glimpse as to where we are today. This from The Obsolete Man, Twilight Zone. Here it is. Hit it.
You walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the superstates that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace.
That of a librarian, is that correct?
That is correct.
Having to do with books.
Yes, sir? Books.
But there is very little call for the services of a librarian. Case in point, a minister. A minister would tell us that his function is that of preaching the word of God. And of course it follows that since the state has proven that there is no God, that would make the function of a minister somewhat academic as well.
There is a God.
You are in error, Mr. Wordsworth. There is no God. The state has proven that there is no God.
You cannot erase God with an edict.
You are obsolete, Mr. Wordsworth. You have no function, Mr. Wordsworth. You're an anachronism, like a ghost from another time.
I am nothing more than a reminder to you that you cannot destroy truth.
You're a bug, Mr. Wordsworth, a crawling insect, an ugly, misformed little creature who has no purpose here, no meaning.
I am a human being. I exist. And if I speak one thought aloud, that thought lives, even after I'm shoveled into my grave.
Delusions, Mr. Wordsworth. Delusions. The Bible, poetry, essays of all kind, all of it an opiate. The state has no use for your kind.
Romney Wordsworth, step forward. The board finds you obsolete.
Your rights are as follows, Mr. Wordsworth. You are to be liquidated within a period of 48 hours, but you have an option as to method and precise time.
But I choose the following. To be given an assassin to whom I shall tell the method of my execution.
Ah, Mr. Wordsworth, that can be arranged indeed.
All right. That was from the episode, The Twilight Zone, The Obsolete Man. And I like how it ends because it shows you how sniveling cowardice these elites are. You might as well insert, President Trump, you, me, the baker on the street corner, whatever, you know, the store owner for the character of Burgess Meredith. And the guy on the pedestal, Yuval Noah Harari, Klaus Schwab, that little maggot, or any one of the 535, well, minus maybe 5 or 6 or 8 lawmakers. And that also includes the executive branch, and most assuredly the DOJ, and for sure the DOJ and the FBI. All right. So that sets the stage, sets the tone for where we're at on a larger scale. Now, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act passed, which you talk about an oxymoron in terms of how bad things are. Included in the undergirding of this is, and I don't know how many people have seen this, the link will be up at HagmanReport.com. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. When I say HagmanReport.com, you have to go and you have to open today's program for the links. Now, here is last year's annual report from the IRS. Have you seen this, folks? Now, I know that I think last week InfoWars ran a piece on this, but there's the cover, the annual report 2021, and page 17 specifically, because of time, I just want to make sure we get enough time in here. Page 17 explains how these 87,000 new IRS agents, these recruits, through the NCITA, the National Criminal Investigation Training Academy. And by the way, this used to be a good thing. I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, when you were fighting real bad guys, it was a good thing. Now, look at this. I want you to look at those pictures on the screen for the radio listeners. What you have are, on the left, a small picture, of course, recruits training with firearms. But on the right, what you have is not a commercial building, not a drug warehouse or a meth lab. You've got a suburban house, a house located in suburbia, with a contingent of IRS agents descending upon this suburban house. That's right. That could be your house. It could be my house. It could be Eric's house. Now, Eric lives in a van down by the river, but I'm kidding. Love you, Eric, man. Appreciate you, everything you do. All right. But the fact of the matter is, the government has declared war on us. I've been telling you this. How long ago did I utter the words, America is a captured operation? I'm talking probably a decade ago. I started saying that. Well, we are a captured operation. And then, of course, down the bottom right, the photographs there, the little photographs. You've got IRS agents in the prone position using long guns. Oh, the scary rifles that we're not allowed to own. And of course, standing up in the picture of the right of that, standing up, shooting the scary long black firearms. Oh, my goodness. Holy cow. Or handguns. You know, it doesn't matter, but the scary, scary guns that we're not allowed to have. But see, here's what's happening today. Okay, just so you know, the IRS is joining up with the Department of Justice, with the FBI. What is it now? Where is this here? No, I have it somewhere. I got all these notebooks going. I probably should like. I need a secretary. Anyone want to? Never mind. Whispering little nothings in my ear. I mean, no, he said I'm hearing things. Okay. Okay, so we've got in the budget $700,000 worth of ammunition this year. Here it is, right here. I'm sorry. As of the 2017 GAO report, understand that 1.8% make more than $400,000 per year. So by definition, you would only need about six IRS agents. Now they have, in addition to the ones they have, they've got about 87,000 more. So you think they're going after the 1.8% of the population in the United States? No. You also have the Criminal Investigative Division holding on to 500 million rounds of ammunition. They've got that on hand constantly. That's a half a billion rounds of ammunition. As I said before, over 5,000 weapons they have. And this year, this bill included, along with some other related bills, give them another $700,000 more ammunition. So there's that. Now I want to turn to, I don't know about the sound, if you can hear me clearly because of the construction, but I want to turn to Alex Jones talking about this very issue. The IRS training included armed agents carrying out simulated assault on suburban homes. We just covered this. Alex does a great job on this. And then I want to move quickly after that to the scorched earth Tucker Carlson, back from vacation, pissed off as ever, monologue briefly. He could say stuff better than I can about the raid on Mar-a-Lago and what that's going to do, because the temperature of this country is over it's nearing the boiling point. You know it. I know it. We can feel it. There will be something that will happen. It'll be blamed on conservatives like us. Our voices will be marginalized, cut off of all platforms. And as a matter of fact, if we are even allowed to roam among the, if we as the unwashed masses are allowed to roam freely still, okay, it's just a matter before they pick us up and put us in a gulag somewhere. I'm telling you, that's the way it's going to be. They're coming after us. I've seen the documentation where they're coming after the people behind the microphones. I've seen it. You have no idea the upset that it's causing among broadcasters and podcasters. The people are saying, look, I'm not going to talk about this, or I'm not going to talk about that. Bullshit. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to talk about whatever I want to talk about. You want to take me away, you're going to have a fight on your hands. All right. But getting back to the subject at hand, the IRS, Alex Jones addressing this. I believe this might have been last Friday when he was traveling, but does a great job in outlining this. And I want to get to this right away. So go ahead and play clip two.
I wanted to talk about a giant story that broke last night. And that's the World Economic Forum coming out and saying, not as that you will eat the bugs and you'll like it, or you'll own nothing and like it, but that we need to merge.
I forgot. The intro, the segue was from that Twilight Zone episode into the IRS. Go ahead.
AI pre-crime surveillance over the entire internet, so that you are precluded from posting tens of thousands of different terms or ideas in any combination from ever even making it onto the internet, so that using a pre-crime system, you are stopped before you can even make those posts. Now, this has already been going on with some of the AI they've put in over Facebook and Twitter in the last few years, as well as Google. But now they are institutionalizing this entire system of pre-crime. And pre-crime in and of itself is surveillance. It means we're all being surveilled in live time, and they are forcing this structure over the American people, the people of the world, for total control. Then, whether you're in the US or Europe or Australia, it's the very same globalist Great Reset policies of massive hiring sprees of armed domestic political police forces that are arresting people for their free speech in places like England because they posted a trans flag with a swastika on it and said they didn't agree with the trans movement targeting children. That's what's happening in England, people being arrested for their speech. And now here in the United States, with the precedents they've been trying to set with myself and others, they're selling the idea that if you question an official narrative, you can be sued into oblivion. And they're bragging and admitting they're going to use this to shut down the populist, anti-globalist movement here in the United States and again in other nations. This is a coordinated, absolute tyranny. And what's sick about it is people like General Milley, we now learn, threatened to resign under Trump and they've now released his resignation letter that he never issued when he was still in the Trump administration as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And in it, he said that Trump was a tyrant and that Trump was taking liberties and that Trump wanted to use the military against the American people when none of that was true. All Trump tried to do was get the National Guard out to stop the burning of major cities during the summer of rage and the most peaceful, so-called mostly peaceful protest. So they engage in this garbage over and over again, claiming that Trump or the right wing or populist movements or nationalist movements are the ones oppressing people, but it's the left censoring and surveilling and controlling and demonizing and suing and attacking. On top of that, we now have the IRS training, included armed agents carrying out simulated raids on family homes. And of course, over the years, ordering billions of dollars of bullets and posting job applications for people that, quote, want to use lethal force. So while they try to defund the police from stopping robbers and kidnappers and killers, with George Soros controlling almost every city's DAs and other county attorneys and prosecutors, they're moving to create that domestic security force just as big and just as strong as our military that Obama talked about right when he was getting into office, now more than 15 years ago. This is an incredible time to be alive. It's an incredibly dangerous time to be alive, but the power structure in their own documents admits they're in trouble. The world's turning against them, and that's why they're trying to accelerate their New World Order plan of the technocracy, of the AI, of the total control grid ahead of humanity regaining control of our destiny. So here's some of the notes I wrote just about what's currently happening in our civilization. This is a total control system, AI run, human programmed. This is an open world ministry of truth they're establishing, including here domestically, what I call, what they call full spectrum dominance. You have the IRS as their new major enforcement arm. We have the new terror directive signed last year by Obama's minion, Biden, saying questioning open borders, lockdowns, forced inoculations, or stolen elections is an act of terror. We also have their domestic Antifa brown shirt thugs running around harassing conservatives and Christians and pro-life organizations viciously around the country, and they call it hunting the populist, hunting the conservatives, and they fall in line with the biggest banks, the most powerful groups in the establishment. We have a surveillance state that carries out the censorship. We have the secretive informant systems that they've established. And then we have General Milley having the nerve to sit around and claim that President Trump is the one that was trying to establish a dictatorship. Ladies and gentlemen, InfoWars is now more critical than ever. It is such a valuable resource.
Right. Alex Jones, you're right. InfoWars is more critical than ever. And by the way, he did an appearance with Steve Bannon. He's got two trials coming up simultaneously. Okay, planned by the same judge who tried him on the Sandy Hook, but it was for the damages. So he's got a trial in Connecticut and a trial in Texas. He's got to be at two trials at the same time, planned by the courts. How in the hell is that even possible? They're laughing at you and I. They're laughing at us. They're taking Alex Jones to task. And for those people who say, well, Alex Jones is, you know, controlled opposition, a shill, this or that, you know what? Bite me, because I'll tell you what, he's got more skin in the game than anyone else has. So far, and he's paid a bigger price than anyone else has so far. I will tell you that, as far as podcasters, broadcasters, and people being ahead of the game. All right, Tucker, back from vacation. I want to get this in because he said this better than I could ever say it. I don't have writers, of course. I probably should, but I don't have writers. But when he came back from vacation, he addressed the Mar-a-Lago situation. I'm going to play just about 3.5-4 minutes of his opening monologue. This from last night about Mar-a-Lago. Drives it home. This also made the Gateway Pundit, of course. But please take a watch, take a listen on this, and understand how bad things are right now. Here's Tucker Carlson.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson. Tonight, happy Monday. We've had a few days to reflect on it and have concluded that no honest person could believe that the raid on Donald Trump's home last week was a legitimate act of law enforcement. It was not. Even the Biden administration didn't really bother to pretend otherwise. The official explanations that we have heard for the raid make no sense at all. It doesn't matter how forcefully they are repeated by the media, they're nonsensical. In case you've forgotten what they are, here's the very first explanation they gave us.
Why did this guy have these ultra-classified documents in the basement of Mar-a-Lago, unsecured, where they could be presumably broken in on or stolen or photographed and given to hostile foreign powers or conceivably even terrorists?
Are you listening to this? So it's not just classified documents in the basement of Mar-a-Lago, but according to Michael Beschloss, the pet historian of the half-wits who run our country, these are ultra-classified documents, the most classified kind, just sitting there helpless in boxes like maidens in bikinis waiting to be photographed by terrorists. You just imagine Al-Qaeda taking selfies with these documents, one after the other relentlessly, repulsive and terrifying. Is it true? At this point, no one has provided proof that it is true, not that august historians like Michael Beschloss wait around for actual evidence before pronouncing final judgment on cable news shows. They just go ahead. But for the sake of argument on our show, we're going to say that it is in fact true and that Donald Trump did in fact have boxes of classified documents sitting in his cellar. Let's say that's true. What would it mean? Well, what it means depends in part on what the documents were. Did those documents contain meaningful information? Should they have been classified in the first place? Is there a good reason the rest of us should not have been allowed to see those documents? Now, you never hear those questions asked in public, but anyone who lives in Washington knows perfectly well they should be asked in public a lot. Because in Washington, virtually anything can qualify as an official state secret, and often does. In 2011, to name one of many examples, the CIA finally declassified a trove of documents from the First World War. These documents dated back to 1917, almost 100 years before. One of these documents, the most ultra secret of them, contained a recipe for disappearing ink. Now, why would federal bureaucrats spend an entire century hiding an outdated recipe for ink that you can buy legally in any magic store for your fifth grader? Good question. No one asked it. Instead, then CIA Director Leon Panetta issued a press release bragging about how he was giving the secret ink recipe to a grateful public. Quote, "These documents remained classified for nearly a century until recent advancements in technology made it possible to release them," Panetta wrote. "When historical information is no longer sensitive, we take seriously our responsibility to share it with the American people." Now, there's no hint whatsoever that Panetta was joking when he wrote that. "You're welcome, America. Here's your century-old ink recipe." Again, this was in 2011, so think it through. You had to wonder, what recent technological advancements was Leon Panetta talking about in the press release? And just how recent were they? Was Panetta actually saying that CIA spies were still communicating in World War I era disappearing ink as of, say, 2010? Or even as of 1950? Please. It was bizarre. Of course, it was another lie from the people in charge. Here's the truth. The documents have been classified for 100 years, not because disappearing ink was any sort of national security secret. They've been classified because the government's default position in every case is that you have no right to see anything ever. It is their information. It is not yours. Yours to citizen. Yours to the taxpayer. Shut up and pay for it all. To this day, there are large amounts of classified information remaining from World War II. These are documents written 80 years ago by people whose grandchildren are now old. But you still can't see it. You don't have the clearances. Sorry. So when they tell you that Donald Trump had classified documents in his basement, those materials could be literally anything. But once again, for the sake of argument, we're going to stipulate that Trump did have possession of documents that were classified for some good reason. Documents that, for example, we legitimately would not want the Chinese government to see. If that is true, would it justify what happened? Would it justify sending a large team of federal agents to shut down the entire southern tip of Palm Beach to raid Mar-a-Lago on a weekday? No, it wouldn't. So one of the laws they're telling you that Trump broke doesn't even have criminal penalties attached to it because it's not serious enough. Federal paramilitaries don't show up at your house when you violate the Presidential Records Act. And in fact, as we later learned, the actual warrant for the raid, which was signed by an openly partisan judge who, because you couldn't make any of this up if you tried, once represented Jeffrey Epstein's side in the famous underage sex case, that judge allowed the FBI to seize virtually every piece of paper in Donald Trump's house, whether or not it had ever been classified. They took Roger Stone's clemency order, for example. That had been on the front page of the Washington Post, so it was therefore probably not a secret. Apparently, the feds even walked off with Donald Trump's passports, preventing him from leaving the country. So whatever else this raid was not about the Presidential Records Act. That explanation is absurd. It's almost as ridiculous as the claim that the White House knew nothing about the raid before it happened. Right. Please. If they're going to lie to us, they ought to try a little harder. So what was this raid about? Well, we're keeping track. So here's the second explanation they gave us.
Now with Donald Trump, suddenly, when we're talking about the possibility of nuclear weapons, classified documents of the highest classified status being stolen from the White House and taken to Mar-a-Lago.
Just a reminder of why the Justice Department might be a little bit concerned about nuclear secrets knocking around Mar-a-Lago.
Two words for you, my friend. Two words. Mm-hmm. Nuclear secrets.
What? Nuclear secrets? Nuclear secrets are the highest classified status. Ultra secret nuclear secrets. Donald Trump stole those. Ladies and gentlemen, America is in danger tonight. That was their new explanation for the raid. Now, that revised storyline was leaked anonymously to an obedient press corps, which, as you just saw, repeated every word like it was verifiable fact. Yet once again, no one even bothered to explain what these nuclear secrets might be. What's a nuclear secret exactly? And what did Trump plan to do with them? Did he plan to defect to Moscow? Give the launch codes to Vladimir Putin? Start his own rogue state in the Bahamas? Nobody said. But that didn't stop former CIA director Michael Hayden from suggesting that Donald Trump should be executed, fried to death in the electric chair for committing these crimes, whatever these crimes were. We still don't know. There weren't a lot of facts floating around. There still aren't. But there was a reason for that. They couldn't tell you the whole story. They couldn't release all the documents because that would jeopardize American national security. So instead, you're just going to have to trust them. And of course, you're going to have to listen to their outrage.
We can go to HagmanReport.com or find this clip. The entire 26 minutes. This goes on for another 20 plus minutes. I'm telling you, he was right on the money with all of this. Just by way of classification, explanation of classification of documents. This is a true story. I did look this up. I did find this in my records. On October 9th of 2009, Randy Taylor and myself submitted a 47-page document to the FBI Washington field office, which made it to the Department of Homeland Security on October 9th, 2009 at 19:15 hours. Okay, that's 7:15 in the evening. That was on October 9th. So submitted to Washington field office, FBI, and made it to DHS. On October 10th, the DHS apparently, based on our information, classified the documents that we had sent to them. Now, we maintained a copy of those documents. If it was a 47-page document, one document, 47 pages. On October 12th, we had referred to the documents in an email to both the Washington field office of the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. This is, and we have all of the documentation behind this. At 12:17 in the afternoon, and we were warned that we were not to talk, not to, in fact, we were warned that mere possession of this 47-page document that we turned over, since it was classified as TSSCI, top secret now, that we could be jailed for having that document that we turned over, that we found and turned over to the Washington field office of the FBI and DHS. Did you hear what I just said? I'm telling you right now, that's so when you're talking about security classifications, and you heard Tucker about the disappearing ink. Okay. This is absolutely ridiculous, but yet when you've got, Hillary Clinton with 33,000 emails and verification by the highest levels of our intelligence community that those emails were actually hacked by an adversarial source or adversarial country. nothing happens to her. Yet you've got Donald Trump with boxes of who knows what in the storage area at his residence, as permitted to do through the Presidential Records Act in combination with the National Archives, and they raid his home. Folks, the temperature of this country is, it's, we are overheating right now. And I'm telling you, whatever happens next, it doesn't matter what happens next. It's going to be blamed on a Trump supporter, somebody in support of the American nationalist movement. We are going to be in the crosshairs of an out-of-control state that wants to take us out and make us obsolete, because their end goal is a lot bigger than what we're looking at. Their end goal is to make us all obsolete. Transhumanism, AI, all of that, as our fundraiser had discussed eons ago, thousands upon thousands of years ago. Get rid of the human race, replace the human race with the minions of Satan, essentially. And evil will take over. That's where we're at. We're looking evil straight in the eye. All right, with me right now, Stan Dale from standale.com. Folks, if you haven't done so already, go to standale.com. Please do that. Bookmark standale.com. Make sure that you check out his all of his intellectual products, whether it be his books, his DVDs, Dare to Prepare, Holly Dale's book, absolutely a necessary item to get. EMPShield.com. Go to EMPShield.com. In fact, there it is, right there, EMPShield.com. Go there, grab one, two, or five of them. That's right. Father's Day is coming up next year, but we may not see that in the way you think. So get it now. In fact, if you buy more than one, or if you buy them in quantity, there are discounts, but use promo code Hagman for $50 off empshield.com. And also, while you're at standale.com, make sure you do yourself a favor, and that's sign up for his Patreon meetings. I mean, you want some great Patreon meetings. You want to learn stuff. You want to have some great conversations with Stan Dale. Do that. Good. Sign up for his Patreon. That's standale.com. Stan, how are you, sir?
I'm well. It sounds like you had a lot to talk about today. Kind of almost leave you just what thing, what do I say? I mean, it's here.
Well, you know what I did initially? I was going to wait for this, but I played the 2 minutes of The Obsolete Man from the Twilight Zone. You remember that episode?
No. Tell me about it.
It's a librarian. Burgess Meredith was a librarian in a future time. Of course, this is in 1959, and went before a board of, went before the party of Davos, and they declared him an obsolete man. There were no books, there was no God, so, you know, get rid of him. You're to die. So ultimately, that was his sentence, because he was obsolete, rendered obsolete. Kind of what Yuval Noah Harari and Klaus Schwab and others are trying to do to us right now. And that was kind of the opening segment to this, to all of what's going on. The picture is bigger, and that's why I played that.
Oh, I remember that one. Then after the blast came and wiped out the city, he comes crawling out of the rubble and puts on some broken glasses.
No, that was a different episode. No, you were close, though. I didn't want to give away the ending, but no, you're close. There was a blast, but with a twist. This guy was sentenced to die because he was obsolete. He wasn't needed anymore. And, you know, people making decisions for him in that population as they are today, with a few exceptions, but we haven't gotten to that point yet. But that was an episode. All right. So how you been, man? Been well?
Oh, yeah. This last week, I've had a few things that tweaked my interest and sent me down rabbit holes looking for stuff, and found a lot of things that I didn't know about the universe and, life and everything. And you'll see a lot of my show images page has to do with astronomical things that I think are important to know. If you look at these kind of things like the sun and our galaxy and what the Webb telescope is being able to tell us about things. But also, I saw some of the things other than the political, which everybody is reading and hearing about now. I saw a little bit in the Middle East and then a little bit about our weather and reasons to have an EMP shield. Eric, if you're there pushing the button, push the button on slide 52 on our show images page, where we talk about another gas explosion occurred in the neighborhood, second in 5 years. And we click on that. You will see in the text, the article that comes up says that the second earth-shaking explosion in 5 years killed, three killed this time. And it goes on to tell you about how the houses in that group were clobbered, you know, the main house where the people died, apparently, just you can see in the picture that's there with it down toward the bottom of the page. Just looked like a tornado hit right there at that house and just blew everything away. But why did it affect 39 other homes? You know, it was from the shock, from the gas, I think, from the gas supply that didn't explode in their area for some reason. But they are leaning toward the fact that the gas in the house got loose and filled the house with the, you know, natural gas, and it sparked and ignited and blew the heck out of that house. I mean, looking at that, boy, you'd think they'd use dynamite or something. So I looked at this and I thought, okay, now this is the second time this has happened in that neighborhood, but when an EMP pulse hits our country and wipes out the things that control our gas pressure in our neighborhood, the electricity, you know, the voltage levels in the water, when something hits the controllers for that, this is going to happen all over the country, that that there won't be pressure controllers for gas, and the voltage in the grid will go you know, up and down and start frying things. And it's going to be important, extremely important. If you're going to have working fridges and house and computers and stuff after that EMP pulse happens, you're going to have an EMP shield to shunt all of this high voltage that comes in from a pulse from a nuclear bomb, and all of it that comes in from a solar CME that lasts for hours down into the earth beneath your house, because you want to get it away from you and away from your electronics, because it'll fry them. And it will also cause a fire, most probably in your breaker box, if you don't have it shunted to ground. Now, look at slide 53. Eric, just click on the picture for a moment there. This shows what are called SCADA devices. Now, those are called Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition, or SCADAs. Now, these are placed all over your neighborhood in various places. And if you look at the picture there, you can see how the blue box with little TV screens on it is, you have it in the residence, you know, for the neighborhood. Then you have it for the distribution systems and for transmission. All along the way from where it's made until where you consume it, there are devices, you know, electronics that control the pressure, the voltage, and the water flow to your home. And if these are wiped out so they can't control that pressure, things will go ape real quick. There will be massive buildups of gas pressure in your neighborhood somewhere, and then it'll break through your seals in your house because it's such a high pressure. And it will release this gas suddenly into the house, and then, of course, it will explode and burn down your house, your neighbors, and that kind of thing. Which is another reason I do stress to people, if you have, say, natural gas supply to your house, in addition to an EMP shield, you need a wrench that you can get down there and turn off the gas flow to your house at the pipe outside the house so that it doesn't get in and blow through the seals in the stove or wherever you're using natural gas and create an explosive fire. A wrench, you can get it down at Lowe's. The EMP shield you have to get from our company, but Doug will tell you about that in a minute. Now, this is why it's important to be aware of your surroundings, what's happening, and to take proactive moves. If it's an EMP pulse, immediately run out and turn off your gas, because the water and electricity will be taken care of in other ways. You can turn off your water at your mains water hydrant, and you can mitigate the electronics and the electrical fire with the EMP shield. Very important to remember that. In slide 55 now, Eric, we're going to talk just a bit about the Abraham Accords in the Middle East. Now, there's a conference that the Israelis were calling get the Arab states that haven't joined yet to go ahead and join this peace treaty, this Abrahamic covenant. And the countries that they've asked said, look, we're going to pass on it this time, because right now you're approaching an election and we want to be sure of who's going to be, you know, honoring this new Abrahamic covenant. If it's going to be the existing party, is it going to be Netanyahu? Well, he's the guy that started. They're going to probably want to go with him. So they're going to stand back and not interfere with the elections in Israel so that it can be settled without Arab, you know, influence, no complaints there. And then hopefully Netanyahu will be back in control and the whole process will go as planned, also fulfilling biblical prophecies, I'm sure. Now, we talk about Damascus a lot in the Bible, saying it's going to disappear overnight and become a ruinous heap. Now, there are a couple of ways that I can see that can happen. An act of God, where some of those volcanic vents that are underneath Syria and right up against the mountains there could explode under Damascus and turn it into, you know, a rubble heap from the explosion of the gas and the magma that came up from the volcano. And you can see that Syria has a lot of these that have happened previously. Just black humps. If you look on the Google Earth, you'll see these stacks of rocks and rubble. That's an act of God. The other one is an attack by Israel. Now, Israel has been attacking sites in Damascus for some time, getting rid of weapons, supplies, and missile construction stuff for Iran being done there in a suburb of Damascus. Now, let's just look at the text of slide 56. It says, Israel launched a missile attack on western and central Syria Sunday night, killing three soldiers and wounding three others. The Syrian military said, they said this in a statement, the Syrian army said that IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, targeted several positions in the coastal province of Tartus and suburbs of the capital of Damascus. Now, when is there going to be something the Israelis find out about in Damascus, like nukes from Iran being there, that they finally have to attack that? And whether the Israelis use a nuke themselves or whether they detonate a nuke that is in one of the missiles that Iran has sneaked into Damascus, Damascus gets destroyed by a nuclear explosion. And I guarantee you that that'll leave a ruinous heap.
I would say, yeah.
Right. So it's just another mention of Damascus. We see the possibilities there. So just watch your news. Damascus, one more, we may get up and she's gone and the war is on. Now, going over to Ukraine in slide 57, the Russians have been preparing in Belarus, right next to Ukraine, a supply of these missiles. I think they're called ISK, something or other. That's the name of them. That's a picture of it there. If you click on the picture, you can see it. It's not a big thing compared to a human being, but it's enough to deliver a tactical nuclear weapon between 10 and 20 kilotons, which is mighty, you know, if it's in your town, especially some of the smaller towns there on the border. It's called the Iskander missile. Anyway, they're getting ready. Putin has made deals with Belarus. Pardon me just a second here. Sorry, I got a frog living in my throat today. Anyway, that's kind of the lay of the land politically over in the Middle East and in Europe. And we have our own problems coming here in slide 54. If you look at that, it's a forecast for 30 years from now. As we approach it, that's 30 years to this maximum discomfort. They're saying that a quarter of the United States, and in the graph above there, in the picture, you can see that dark red area all along the coastal areas and up into Oklahoma and, New Madrid area, that the temperature is going to rise to the point that you're looking 125 degrees Fahrenheit and higher in just 30 years. Now, that affects about 1,000 counties in the United States. What the article didn't tell us was, well, okay, why is the temperature going to get that high in these areas? What's happening at the equator, south of what's delivering this? Something that big is not going to be man-made. It's going to be solar. So here's another one of those little subtle clues about your life changing greatly in the next few years due to climate change, but which all dates back to the sun, which we can't control. We can just try to mitigate what happened.
All right, let me ask you a question about that, because we've heard this over the years, 30 years, you know, 1970, coast is going to be underwater. It's going to be an ice age. It's going to be this. So, yeah, I know. I mean, do you believe that? Do you believe that graph in whole or in part? I mean, because haven't we heard this kind of stuff before and it's never come to fruition?
Yeah, sure we have. And that's the left trying to, you know, get everybody scared about climate control and to follow into line the way they want you to stop using gasoline and diesel and things and, you know, follow the tree hugger syndrome. But what they're saying is incorrect as far as the cause, but it is coming, whether they know it or not. The sun is getting hotter. It is misbehaving, which I'll cover a little bit later in the show here. And so when they put this kind of stuff up, it ties in with what I read in technical papers about the increase of heat on the planet from the sun. It's no other source. And, you know, of consequence anyway. I mean, you have some minor contribution by cow gas and, you know, cars and things. But basically, we're losing, like I talked about last week, glaciers. They're starting to melt like crazy in Greenland. And they're putting water back into the ocean, which does change coastal sea levels. There's no question that we could, at the extreme, if we melted both poles, raise the sea level in most countries by 200 to 230 feet, according to the NASA forecast. But that's not going to happen. There will be some sea level rise, I'm pretty sure, and significant enough to you know, hurt real estate. When I say sea level rise, it's like 10 feet. You think, oh, 10 feet, that's nothing out there at the beach. But 10 feet goes way back inland in most of the countries that it affects, you know, like miles back into the area, flooding neighborhoods. So it is important to see the correlation between heat and other events, especially extreme weather events, you know, extreme lightning storms and hurricanes and flooding. We're seeing that even now in where is it, Tennessee, some of the other places around the state or the country, that the change in heat and solar output is affecting us directly already now. So it may be that they've exaggerated in the past, Doug, you know, and they know it's coming, you know, and like that little girl over in Europe that says, you know, the end of the world in 12 years. This is all scare tactic. Again, as I have said many times, if I were in charge of the planet and I knew that we were going to be facing an extinction level event almost from the sun, I would not tell everybody that that's what's about to happen. I would give them little clues, little hints to those who think and read about this kind of stuff in technical papers so that some people would prepare and try to preserve the human genome past that point. But I wouldn't tell them officially because that would mean we'd have a panic, anarchy, and we couldn't organize underground seed storage and underground bunkers for, you know, the elite to restart the thing with a gene pool that would be put underground. So I wouldn't come out and just say it's official. Now, you can say these things, you know, like the world's going to end in 12 years. Well, it's a girl that, you know, what's her source of information, you know, a Ouija board or something? It's not scientific. But we are approaching a decade here or less of extreme changes on the planet due to changes in the sun and our magnetic field. It may be one of those false warnings, but it's for a good reason. Even though it's from the left, I got to say, it's perhaps going to get a number of people to pay attention to preparing for what's coming. That's just my thought on it anyway.
Yeah, that's fine. And Greta, the young lady you were referring to, yeah, she's online too, and she just left a message. All she said was, how dare you, Stan?
Did she say that?
How dare you? Yeah. you really eat bugs. All right.
Yeah, well, that's how I dare you. It's the other side of the coin. Yeah. Another thing in the United States, a subtle thing, not probably going to happen today or tomorrow, but in slide 49, I had a look at click on the picture that, Eric, it's a picture of the New Madrid area, and you can zoom it up so you can read the stuff, the text in it. It's from the University of Memphis, looking at the earthquake plot on the east coast of the United States. And where you see in that top part of the picture, it's a dual picture, you see red lines, which are the fault lines along the New Madrid area from Memphis up toward the corner of Tennessee there. Now, in the last 6 months, this map shows these earthquakes. They're minor ones, you know, two and a half, maybe one or two that are right around three. But these earthquakes are occurring in a cluster there in the New Madrid zone right there. Is this like the plexiglass thing where you take a piece of plexiglass and you start to bend it to break it, and before it actually snaps, you get all these little microfractures up at the top? Are we seeing micro earthquakes here indicating there's going to be a stress relief, a significant one, in the New Madrid area? And if you look over into the Appalachian range to the east of that, it's been getting a number of smaller fractures on the eastern side of the range. All of these are, to me, an indicator to watch. And if you scroll down toward the bottom part of the photo, what it's showing there is the magnitudes of these things and the depth of them. The circle size is how strong they are. And so you can see from that that we're looking at around Richter 2 to 3 in most of these earthquakes, and maybe even 1 point something or other. But they are fairly deep. The blue ones are 21 kilometers or about 10, 12 miles deep. And then the red ones are, you know, surface mount, and the orange ones are a little bit deeper. And yeah, this just, it caught my eye as I was going through the earthquake history in the area there, that it's very slowly sneaking up on us, all these little micro fractures in the New Madrid area particularly, that we're going to see some actions there, I'm pretty sure. So if you live in that area, you know, just be advised. It's amazing how much we depend on traffic across the Mississippi River and across the New Madrid area. If we lose the major bridge connectors and roads that get us across the river, then the east is going to be cut off from the west of the United States, and we're going to have a happy time trying to get goods and services across that.
Anyway. Unless you have one of those old aqua cars that they made for a year. I don't know.
Yeah.
Remember
those?
Yeah,
James Bond movie, you showed up one where they drove off the road into the lake or whatever. Yeah.
The only thing is the maintenance was real high. Yeah. After every water thing, you have to take them out and re-grease the under. Yeah.
Apparently Elon Musk has developed that. Tesla has it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess he's making it with Teflon or waterproof and rust-proof things underneath that will be exposed to the water.
I guess, but
You can always call Elon to come out and fix it if you're stuck out there. He can walk on water. Do you know that?
Some tell me, but yeah.
Gosh.
I don't know. But that's interesting about the locations of the quakes. I don't think people really put a lot of have a lot of attention in that area, so it's pretty good.
Yeah. Look, it's out of sight, out of mind, and you know, it's the frog in the boiling water, you know, syndrome, where you kind of gradually heat up to danger point, and you can't jump out of the boiling water when it's too late. So that's why I look for these subtle things. But like with the sun this time, this year, it is not subtle. These events are leading up to a real surprise for the solar system and for Earth in particular. There have been some interesting discoveries in astronomy in the last 2 weeks that have just they've upped the game against us. It's allowing things to happen, or us to understand things happening on the sun that can throw chunks of stuff at us. I mean, not just radiation, that we're talking about flying debris from the sun. In fact, let me just see if I can find
that can't be good.
No, that's slide 43, Eric. There was a what they call a surface mass ejection. That's like chunks coming off of Betelgeuse. After these chunks left the star, the solar mass ejection cooled, forming a dark cloud that famously dimmed Betelgeuse in 2019 and 2020. Even casual skywalkers watchers could look up and see the change in the light coming from Betelgeuse. Now, in the illustration, the artist's illustration in the picture there, you see it progresses from the left in March of 2019 all the way over to January, February 2020, and you see the cloud is cooled and become dark. Now, the Bible does say that a cloud will surround the sun. Now, I don't think it's going to come drifting in and from outer space, outer edge of our solar system, and, you know, glom around the sun. I think it will come from the sun just like this as a surface mass ejection. The sun is throwing off a lot of plasma plumes and stuff, dark plasma and stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute. And so all of this is leading to a threat that, again, fulfills biblical, or will fulfill biblical prophecy when our sun develops a cloud around it as it throws debris off of the surface, which is surface mass ejection. It's another event from the sun that we're learning about from Betelgeuse. That's going to be a lot more serious than just, you know, a coronal mass ejection. It's going to be huge, many times more powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
One of the things that tweaked my interest was a couple of things on what the Webb telescope discovered. And using the data from the telescope, they're finding that they're having trouble supporting the Big Bang hypothesis anymore, that the Big Bang theory hypothesis isn't correct, which is interesting. It affects a lot of us that have used that as a basis for time shift and various other things. But in slide 51, if you click on the picture, you see a picture of a book by Eric J. Lerner, L-E-R-N-E-R. And it's called The Big Bang Never Happened. And it says a startling reflection of the dominant theory of the origin of the universe. So the more that we find out about the universe from our devices that are out there that we're sensing and imaging with, the more that we find out, the more that we realize we don't really understand how the universe worked. I mean, you get back to the biblical discussion in Genesis, which says, and God spoke the universe into existence. And that, I suppose, that could be kind of called a big blast. I don't know whether it'd be a big bang, but stuff went out into nothingness that wasn't organized, and swirls of energy spun around and formed galactic clusters and galaxies and all kinds of stuff that we're just now discovering. But the guy says in the slide 51, he says, although we didn't usually hear of it, there's dissatisfaction with the standard model of the Big Bang, which ever since it was first proposed by George Lemaire nearly a century ago. But no one expected the James Webb telescope to contribute to the debate. The Big Bang theory crucially depends on the inflation hypothesis that at the outset of the universe, the universe expanded many orders of magnitude faster than the speed of light. But experiments have failed to prove evidence of cosmic inflation, and since the series inception, it has been beset with deep puzzles. Now, one of its founders, Paul Steinhardt, founders of the Big Bang theory, has denounced the theory as mistaken and scientifically meaningless. Now, you get back to the issue. Was the universe much more compact, and did it expand, or was it much more compact and it expanded irregularly? Or how did it form? These questions are now going through the intellectual, scientific, you know, atheistic community, and they're worried because they can't figure out, you know, how the universe formed, because their theory, the Big Bang theory, it works up to a point, but when you start testing other hypotheses based on that about behaviors of plasmas and things like that, it falls apart. So it's like with Einstein's theory of relativity. That has been replaced by various models, people trying to resolve issues that couldn't be solved using Einstein's model as it was. It had to be, you know, modified. Some have done, you know, various forms of parallel universes, or, you know, linkages in the existence that take like 10 dimensions to explain the matrix algebra, and they still haven't come to an answer. Now, I look over at slide 50 in the next thing there, and it says, has a super intelligence monkeyed with our universe, the universe's physics. And this is another book by Stephen Meyer, Return of the God Hypothesis. So, like it or not, the atheists are being drawn back into the understanding that there is a God, a creator that created all these things. They say has a super intellect monkeyed with our universe's physics. groundbreaking astronomer Fred Hoyle was a staunch atheist, but then he tried showing that carbon, essential to life, could form easily. Steve Meyer explains, as Hoyle began to reflect on this, it occurred to him that we lived in a kind of Goldilocks universe where everything was just right. The forces were not too strong, not too weak. The masses were not too large, not too small. And he started to rethink his staunch materialistic atheist worldview. And that is the Goldilocks syndrome, because there are so many things, not only in the heavens, but here on the earth, you know, with life forms, insects, fish, you know, people that had to form just right at the right time. They couldn't evolve. They had to simultaneously be created. There's a beetle, one of the examples they use, that emits two gases out its abdomen, and they ignite and blow up in the face of something trying to eat it or kill it. Now, that could not have evolved, you know, accidentally. I mean, there's two gases theory, they would have exploded and there would be no more beetle. So this was planned from the start of that beetle. It had to be built from its very creation in its DNA so that it could use that without destroying itself. There was no evolutionary process available in that. Anyway, that's just a minor thing.
You just described Eric the Tech. So he was created, I'm going to pay for that. But you know, that's something, isn't it? Because
Elon Musk created me.
Oh, well. Yeah. Yes. Well, does that mean you're going to catch fire later or what?
No, it's just going to be hell when I got to replace his battery.
I need a recharge.
So
what you said there about initially about the Big Bang, to me, Big Bang denotes sound, bang sound. So could that be God's voice, you know, biblically? Is that what we're looking at in a sense? They're finally recognizing that or what?
Well, I don't realize. I don't understand. Maybe it could have been that way because definitely it's like a sound, like a voice. In my book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, I related it to a complex waveform, like a spoken word that went forth into nothingness and caused all these spins and spirals. And that, if you look at it that way, say God is here, and here is the empty universe, got fluid in it or something, you know, ether, space, but nothing's moving. It's just there. It's like a blank canvas. And he speaks a word, you know, to speak it into existence from the side. And that goes in, out into there. And from this injection of his spoken word, that vibration, tremendous force and power, obviously, goes into nothingness and starts to organize like smoke curls in a bar room. You see, in this one here, you see these things organizing into spin, vortices, and everything in the universe that we can detect down to the smallest thing has spin if it has mass or gravity. And it all based on the spin of his vibrations that went forth into this still nothingness to create these things. Let me just.
So folks, I suspect this is a rabbit hole that one of the rabbit holes that Stan had gone down this past week. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Big Bang theorists, you know, big loud noise, big explosion. They say it was here in the middle of nothingness that it all went out this way. But if you use the God spoke into it analogy from the Bible, he injected this energy into it at like a start point. And so if that's the case, then what they're looking for as a uniform expansion out like this is incorrect, and they should be looking for an injection at some point that spread out like a smoke ring, even, you know, out into the firmament or the, you know, the deep space or whatever, dark matter. Dark matter, that's interesting. Because
I can
light.
Barely balance my checkbook, and you're talking about this. You think about this. I mean, so what was there before? Nothing, right?
It's, you know, it's like a virtual reality where nothing's been put into it yet.
Okay. Oh, man.
Is your head hurting yet?
Oh, yeah.
But
folks, okay, so here's a good, folks, this is a good example. Well, you got to join Stan and Holly's Patreon, okay, because these are the kind of discussions and stuff that you're going to have, and you're going to leave better than you came, so Patreon.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so better, absolutely. Yeah. Look, you know, you have your pride, quiet moments in places during the day or in the evening, and you sit and you think over a cup of coffee in the morning and, you know, over a glass of wine in the evening or something, and you're thinking about, you know, life, death, universe, and everything. And so you ponder these things. And so the more information you have to ponder with, the more interesting the results become, you know, the questions become. And questions get answered that create more questions. So this is what I'm facing here. I look at our universe as this, and it's enclosed inside of a bigger universe where God dwells, and he has created a virtual reality here. And our whole universe is in this sub-universe of his. It's a virtual reality that you know, we create with computers and stuff electronically, but he's created it with existence. And so I look at that as though I'm watching him in his universe, in his laboratory, kind of going, form, become. And his voice goes out and forms this lopsided, you know, like toroidal spin that breaks into all kinds of galaxies, sub-galaxies, and, you know, matter, which is just spin. Matter, just spin of the fluid of space, which originally was just still. It wasn't doing anything. Now, the Indians, in their, you know, the Asian Indians think that the universe is constantly expanding and then contracting, that it's an oscillating state universe, existing, not existing, that kind of thing. And they say that Brahma, you know, God in their language, created it and set it into motion. And that's the way it happens. It just keeps on going ad infinitum. Created, uncreated, created, and that's their viewpoint. I don't particularly espouse that, but it does indicate that their astronomers, which are very bright, actually, the Indian astronomers have my hat off to them. They're really forward thinkers, and their mathematics and stellar mechanics are really good, great. That they have observed changes from some source. Maybe they were told by fallen angels or whatever that came in the ancient days about how it worked, and that's how they extrapolated to form their religious view of it. Anyway, it's a rabbit hole, but it's a fun one because it sometimes yields results. You say, well, hey, Kelly, that came from the Bible, and this just explains it, you know, in more detail for those of us that got to know, you know, I got to know, and that's what we do in these moments and dig into stuff. And right now, this week has been really good with things to look at. What have we got, about 20 minutes or so?
Yeah, we got about, 13 and 10, about 23 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Well, let's go down to slide 37. Now, here's one of those little things that I thought about sitting out there on the deck and thinking, you know, why does it look like this? It was stars and pictures of stars. And you look at slide 37 and click on the actual picture, and it comes to a much larger picture. And if you scroll down to the somewhere down toward the middle and hit the zoom where you see those two pictures of stars, it says Hubble and Webb in that. If you can get to it, Eric, you'll see a black and white pictures, two pictures of a star. And I wrote this, I wrote to the Webb astronomers about this because I didn't know the answer. I'd never, you know, thought about this. And so I asked their site, there's an explanation. Go down a bit deep. Well, yeah, a little bit deeper down the page. Go on, keep going. You'll see two, keep going. You're almost there. Down, are you down to the bottom already?
Yeah, that's the bottom on this.
No, that's, oh, yeah. Well, go back up to where you see the two yellow things at the top, pictures of the Webb thing. Yeah, and go right underneath that, there are a couple of stars. Just click on those. Yeah, okay. Now, had you ever wondered why the pictures of the, you know, the stars and the heavens and take it, et cetera, have spikes coming out from
them? Yes.
Well, from the Hubble telescope, it has four spikes. But from the Webb, they have six or eight spikes. Why? So I wrote and I said, hey, you know, I'm a dummy. I said, what causes this? And apparently, you know, people who photograph with the telescopes a lot, I don't have one, but they say that the Webb telescope and the Hubble telescope, they're reflector telescopes. And the light comes into a big mirror that focuses the image down to a smaller mirror here that we take the picture with. But yet the smaller mirror has to have struts to hold it onto the big mirror. So you have struts interfering with the light coming in because the light has to go around them. And then the mirror's edge forms an interference pattern to reflections and things like that. So on Hubble, they have four struts that hold the mirror. And that's what you see on that picture we were looking at there, Erica, with the two stars. Yeah. On the left is what a Hubble picture will look like. All the stars that are bright there will cause that diffraction pattern. In the Webb telescope, you'll see these six, and actually the eighth, seventh and eighth are running horizontal there out of it. That's another problem. But anyway, because it's a hexagonal mirror, it has, you know, six edges to it, you know, to the outer edge of the thing, if you look at the right side of that picture there. And it has only three struts, and they're not equally spaced. So we get this strut pattern in the middle, and then we get these six equidistant spikes coming out from the edge interference of the mirror. I'm sure you probably never thought about asking that question in life, but you can click down on the bottom part of that picture where it has that yellow star in the center, and you can see more about what I'm talking about, where these struts and the shape of the mirror affect that. I was just curious. I mean, I was looking at some of these beautiful James Webb pictures coming in, and I thought, you know, why is that star shooting out bright spikes and the other ones are not? And then they answered and said, okay, the stars emit spikes. That's how their image is picked up. Galaxies and gas, clouds don't emit the sparks or the spikes. So he says, when you look out there in these pictures that we take, and in fact, I guess we can look at what I'm here in a minute. If you're looking into a cloud, the cloud is not emitting spikes. It's diffused already. But these points of light tell you that's a star, not a galaxy, because galaxies won't make the spikes and neither will the gas clouds. So isn't that interesting to know?
It is. And read that article, folks, associated with those pictures. Yeah, it is. Wow. So yes. In fact, there was... I was watching a forum. I don't remember where this was, but it was talking about just that subject, and the questions were about that. And when you think about it, yeah, okay. It makes sense when you explain it, but okay. There was a question about that.
Yeah, okay. Well, it shows that all of us dumb minds out here think alike. What's the answer, Jack? And so we got it. Slides 38 and 39, Eric, are of interest here in that just for me and people with a curious mind, these telescopes like James Webb look out at something at a black hole in this particular case in slide 38 and 39. And the telescope sends back data that's not just a picture. It's an analysis of various things. Now, click on the picture in 38. Now, looking, it shows you that you're looking at the center of a galaxy there, which has a black hole in the middle of it. And this telescope breaks out with different frequencies. It interprets different filters, how much atomic hydrogen, molecular hydrogen, iron atom ions, atomic hydrogen, where what the gases are around this particular black hole. It has to do with its spin, with its gravitational pull, various other things. And the surrounding matter around it that it can pull in. But from just that picture, they can separate all this information. I marvel at this. I go over to slide 39 and click on it too. This not only tells you the color or what gas is there, but its velocity, not its speed, its velocity, which speed and direction are two different things. And you'll see here that these color codes, like the bluish and orange things, it tells you that if the light from that gas is moving towards you at a certain speed, then it will be blue, bluish, right? But if it's moving away from you, it'll be more yellowish. And now you look at this picture of this black hole differently because you see what portions of the gas around that black hole are coming at you. And if you look at the argon atoms, which is, you know, the first one of the three at the bottom, you see that there are jets coming towards you. and their debts going away from you, and they're not equally balanced in mass and things like that. So I wish I had one of these when I was a kid as an astronomer. I mean, the things you could get out of these. If I had a spare $1 billion laying around, I guess I could have done it. But, you know, wow.
I don't know. From the things I know, I think you caused enough trouble when you were young. But
Yes. Now, yeah, we won't mention that explosion in the attic now, will we?
Of course not. Explosion in the attic, folks. But that's all right. Yeah.
While we're on these gas things here, click on slide 48, just the picture for the first part here. And this is the gas giant in Orion Nebula, you know, it's supposed to be God's belt buckle or whatever. But anyway, there was something that they noticed here that I had never thought about. It's when stars are first formed, they're from spin and mass accumulating, and then they ignite. And there's a shock wave as they move from wherever they were to wherever they're going to be. And if you click on this picture, on the left side of it, more or less, you'll see some green arrows, two of them, one in the middle and one over toward the left where the bright light is. And these are highlighting two newish stars at that time, whenever it formed, that were forming jets that come out of them, shock waves, actually, as a shell, and we see them as a line or as a seeing through the thickness of it as that star moved through the gas of the Orion Nebula there. You'll see they're moving from the right to the left, a green arrow on the red side and on the bright light side show that. Now, I have an expansion of that, a close-up of that in the right. If you click on that, you'll see the shockwave in more detail in the Orion Nebula there, just beautiful things. It looks like some kind of a modern painting or something, surrealist painting. It is beautiful, though. And you will notice in the bottom on the right side there, a star that's got what? Four spikes. It's a Hubble photograph, right? Just thought I'd tell you that. See it?
Yes. On the...
Yeah, on the right bottom part of that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, yes.
Okay. So we know it was taken by the Hubble. And if you look at the big picture on the left, you'll see some stars are spiking. Other things are not. So, I'm not sure if all of these have spikes. They're so small you can't tell. But anyway, that's how you look into a nebula or some area of space. And does the bright light have a spike or not?
So, and to be clear, all the pretty colors, that's gas, right?
Yeah.
Gases.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are being illuminated by radiation coming from that star. Various other phenomena occurred with that star. Fascinating stuff.
Studies. Wow.
I mean, that's just so beautiful. You can see why I pondered this for a while. It is magnificent. Trying to figure out what happened there. What, even that... That star, the red part there, that Orion Nebula has a star in the middle of it. And you can see it's like it blasted into something. You see it kind of curving around that. And you say to yourself, well, why did that happen? How did that happen? And anyway, that's just my little moments there. They happen occasionally. Now, before we run out of time, I need to talk about our sun again. Where to start? Okay. Let's look at slide 45, Eric. If you click on the slide, it's an animation showing a dark plasma ejection from a very active spot on the sun. I think it's 3078 or something like that. But this is a very rare thing, this plasma tube that's dark. It's a different kind of matter, and it's usually associated with dark matter, which you can't see normally, and yet we have this imaged here in this explosion from the sun. So it's this event was so violent that it made that visible, that tube of dark plasma, as that explosion interacted with the dark matter around the sun. I know that's kind of out there in left field somewhere, but if you guys that are interested in this kind of stuff, if you look up dark matter, in brackets, you know, in quotes, on Google Earth, Google Search, you'll see that there are a number of learned papers on this. And after you've read through them, you'll probably go, oh, is that what it was? Okay. It won't be any clearer, I don't think. But it's a state of matter that is formed in this new reality we're understanding about dark matter, dark energy, and dark plasma. And there was one coming off of the sun. if you look at slide 41 on the picture there, I outline that plasma discharge from the explosion there 2 days ago. See that there, where the little arrows show you that plasma filament. Fascinating thing. Anyway, it does underscore the fact that this is not the normal behavior of the sun. It's becoming very active, and the shell is unstable. The magnetic field is pulling one side of the sun toward the equator and stretching the other one away from it. This is not a good thing when the surface of the chromosphere is so thin, or of the sun, the chromosphere is so thin. If you just search for dark plasma, you'll get some information on that. I'm just trying to see, where are we here? I want to click on that. In slide 41, click on the text and it'll take you to the article on this and several other things on space weather on the 14th. And one of the things I found there was about a sunspot in the northern hemisphere of the sun, which has done, you know, has formed irregularly. Again, not a common occurrence. And when it does occur, it indicates there's a mighty explosion or explosions about to happen in that area. It's called a reversed polarity sunspot. And if you go back to the show images page and click on slide 42's picture itself. Now, when you get that up, I'll talk about it, Erica. This is a picture of the sun showing the polarity of the magnetic fields of the active regions of the sun. And in the big part of the picture, you see up in the northern hemisphere, a little orange box. That little orange box is showing the magnetic field and the actual picture of it, in the orange is the actual picture. And below there on the surface of the sun, where it's blue and red and green, that's showing the direction of the magnetic field. This is the northern hemisphere of the sun. Up here, in the left side of that, you'll see that sunspots in that area should go orange, or you'll register to blue-green. But they should be oriented left to right, orange to blue-green. This one is oriented backwards, blue-green to orange. But all the others up there turn the other way. This is backward. And you look at the southern hemisphere, they go blue-green-orange, like the stranger up in the northern hemisphere there, that upside-down, backwards sunspot region. And that's because it's in the middle of everything else organized a certain way with a magnetic field. But it's in contrast to that, which is going to make, it's not happy there. It's not going to dive down. It's going to dive off. It's against the magnetic field of the northern hemisphere of the sun at this point in time. So I just thought I'd bring that up, that this is an unusual event again, and one which can produce explosions off of the sun of, in this case, significant magnitude, because that's pretty big. And that's, you know, that's kind of in our direction. I can't see here quite date that was. It was the 14th or 15th, I think, or it might have been the 15th. Yeah. Anyway, this is going to throw something pretty soon. And I say duck and cover in the text, and just being silly, you know, frivolous. But this is going to pass away from us. It's moving to the right side of the screen. And that will pass away from us from being Earth-directed in about 48 hours. Well, 36 to 48 hours. So if we catch anything from it, it'll be a glancing blow. Now, why do I say a glancing blow? Let's go over and look at slide 40 at Space Weather, where they reported the 16th of August. You can click to the site there when you click in the text that a cannibal coronal mass ejection is possibly in progress. And that means there was a CME aimed at a glancing blow toward Earth, and then another CME came behind it faster, and it's going to collide with the old CME that's still in motion and form a complex double cannibal CME, where one CME eats the other one, and still going to be partially Earth direction. Now click on the picture first in that, and that's an animation showing top and side views, the green dot is Earth, and the reddish yellow stuff is the CME, two of them coming off toward Earth. And you can see better in probably the bottom one where the two join and strike Earth direct. And you'll see the spikes over on the right. This is the forecast for the 18th, which is Thursday, our time.
So the bottom right picture is what you're saying, or the bottom left picture?
Well, yeah, sorry. The bottom, the top is showing, it's showing the overall view of the sun and two satellites and the Earth, the green thing in the middle of it. And then there is an enlargement of it over on the right to show how much of that filament or that CME is going to hit the Earth. You can see it clipping it because we're okay. And in the bottom set of looking over the top, you can see there that again we get clipped. The major part of it we're ahead of, thank goodness. But that big red thing in the bottom and on the right in that wedge shows that if we'd have been a little bit slower, if this had happened a little bit later, it would have given us a significant coronal mass ejection, or double one, in fact. Okay. Now, if you click on the text for that slide 40, it is for the 16th today morning. Okay, it says active sunspot 3078 has been flaring almost constantly since it developed a delta-class magnetic field earlier on the 15th. The strongest flare so far is an M5 category explosion, which you can click on that and get an image of it. It produced a shortwave radio blackout over the Indian Ocean. A series of CME associated with these flares could start grazing the Earth's magnetic field during the late hours of August the 18th. Now, that's what we were looking at, as you can see there on that page, the motion of it. It'll clip us, but it won't hit us directly. Forecasters expect G1 to G2 class magnetic storms on the Earth, which, they'll interfere with a little bit of radio transmission, et cetera, but it's nothing to really be worried about at this point in time. Anyhow, that's in progress, and we can kind of look for some of the radio stations to be a little bit sketchy during the time of the broadcast late on the 18th or Thursday night.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's have a look at this. Here's a graphic thing, slide 46. This is what I usually put up, showing as much of the sides of the sun and what's facing us and what's coming and going. On the left side at minus 90, there's a bright spot showing that we have another active region that is going to be more active than the one that's produced this backwards pair of sunspots in the northern hemisphere. That's right in the middle at zero latitude and longitude. You'll see a bright spot, which is that reverse magnetic field sunspot pair. But you see around that, like an almost cardioid or heart-shaped dark ring, which is, a thinning area of the coronal field, a coronal surface of the sun. Things can come out of there like extreme solar wind, and I think we're probably seeing some of that attending these things that produce, like over the right side, that produced the plasma tube that was a dark plasma. But what's coming looks to be nastier, but it's in the southern hemisphere. So in about 5 days, we should see that over the weekend as we spin around the sun. Slide 47, quickly here. This shows the current magnetic field of the sun. It's the side of the sun that's being stretched. On the other side, the magnetic field lines are pulling toward the equator from all the active regions. Here, they're being stretched over the horizon, if you wish. So it's stretching this side of the sun. I suspect that's why we're seeing these coronal holes forming in that kind of hook shape, which is part of a cardioid or heart shape on the other scan there. I think.
We're gonna have to keep our eyes on this. Amazing, compared to when we started to now, how much has changed with respect to the sun? Wow, it's incredible.
Yeah, as I say, it was astronomy this week and the sun, etc., that really caught my fancy.
Stan, we've reached the end of the program. I want to say thank you so very much for your time. I know you put a lot of time into these show images and the discussions, and appreciate everything you do, you and Holly, and God bless you, my friend.
It's good to be talking with you and your audience. Thank you now. Bye-bye.
That'll do it for us, folks. Have a great night. May God bless each and every one of you. Please, please, please prepare and pray. Good night.